kind of night so far. Unless Cormella has something else in mind here. Ahead to Mefeka, squared back. Mefeka with it again, saved by Derek. And to get out in transition now for RGV, it's Francois attacking Murad. Cristiano Francois on the left foot, saved by Blanchett. Ricketts plays it through. Lopez coming in. Run coming on the backside of Lopez. Spots it. He does! And that's two for RGV!
Welcome to Roots Pod, an audio production of Roots Blog and member of the Rootscast Broadcast Network. This is Aaron here with Peter and John as we recover from the 4th of July and however you happen to celebrate it, whether it was with grilled meats or with a dog in a basement somewhere hiding from all the big booms outside. However you choose to celebrate this holiday, you know, we're all recovering. We've got a lot of interesting, I think more interesting than most stuff to talk about this time. You know, we've got certain information. Some new shit has come to light since the last episode. So this is going to be a good one. We'll start with the Oakland Soul, who have who finished their inaugural season off with a bang, and then we'll talk about the Roots, both some off-field stuff and unfortunately also some on-field stuff. So let's start with the Soul. Huge win to close out the season, huh? 3-1 over SF Glens, who for much of the season looked like one of the two or three best teams in the USLW League in the country, behind a hat trick from Mana Hayashi. Makes Oakland Soul, they secured second place in the division. Doesn't mean a whole lot as far as the playoffs go, which we'll get to, but it's nice, second place in the division. And John, you were effusive in your praise following the match. I mean, it seemed like you were really impressed by what you saw on the field against Glens.
Yeah, I mean, starting off with Mana, I mean, she came in and really changed the game. Just in that 10 role, we talked to her after the match, and she talked about how she knew how she wanted to play. She said she saw pockets on the field that she, space on the field that she could dribble the ball and take shots, and that's exactly what she did. I mean, that first goal was just a rocket into the net, and it was 4 minutes into the second half. So, I mean, and you see just that big second half change that happened with the Soul, and the whole game was different. It went from Glens on the front foot to Soul on the front foot and front foot often. And also to do it without the big two up front, Miranda Nyland and Sam Tran. Caitlin Brinkman stepped up there. I think it was her only start in the nine. I'm not sure if she rotated up to center forward, but she kind of rotated more out wide in the second half, and that really made a difference. So kind of her more natural way of appearing throughout the season so far, going out wide, sending balls into the box. But I mean, yeah, it was a great performance. Player we have to shout out to NR Ortega. She was amazing. I mean, she's been great the whole season. She had the captain's armband, but what was most notable was how she rotated from center back up to central mid in this game. I mean, she has appeared more so in like that dual role on the field, but in this second half, it was completely as a central mid, kind of a CDM turning into more up the field. But she was, you know, stopping possessions, creating offense from defense, and, you know, being even a facilitator in possession. I mean, she was great. So, I mean, it was a great performance to end the season on.
I was... I was really impressed with the way that the Soul turned things around at halftime. You know, I feel like when a team turns things around at halftime, you have to give credit to the manager. So huge credit to Jess Clinton there. They were just connecting on their passes a lot better. in the second half, and also breaking up possession. And I was in the process of texting John that Ortega was my player of the match, and I was like preempting what I knew he was going to say, and I was like, I know that Hayashi has two goals. I stand by it that she's player of the match. And then Hayashi got the hat trick, and I was like, well, shit. I mean, it's like my first reaction was, oh, shit. But no, I mean, credit to both. They both had incredible games. I was impressed with the way that Ortega was just sitting people down out there. It seemed like saying, if this is the end of the season, it's not going to end without the Glens regretting it. And luckily, she both accomplished that and prolonged the season.
Yeah, so the Soul finished the season with 10 wins, 2 losses, no draws, 30 points for those of you keeping track at home. Second in the NorCal division, and this was critical in some ways. They finished 2 points ahead of Cal Storm. So a draw here would have meant that they tied on points, but Cal Storm had a significantly better goal differential, so they would have taken the second seed. A loss obviously puts them into third outright. So in that sense, huge win, very important. I mean, it's nice to have a win in your last game of the regular season, heading into the playoffs, yada, 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 yada. Unfortunately, as far as the playoffs are concerned, the Soul will get a rematch with the Glens. And I mean, I like the rematch just from a purely theoretical standpoint. This is obviously the team to beat in this sort of 4-team pod, right? I mean, it's Glen, Soul, Storm, and Olleytown FC from, I'm assuming, Olympia, who went 8-0-2 this season in a significantly worse division. I think Glens are probably the class of this little group of four. If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. So I have no problem with the rematch. Sort of the annoying things are, and John, I'll just let you go off after I set this out, because I know you, this has made you a little hot under the collar. The annoying things are that, one, the game is during the workday on a Friday, which is annoying from a fan standpoint because we'd like to watch, and annoying from a team standpoint because there are some players with, I don't want to say actual jobs, but with jobs, salaried or hourly employment, I don't know what, but they might be expected to be at work in the middle of the workday on a Friday. And thing two is that Cal Storm, who finishes below the Soul, get to host their first round playoff matchup, which just seems like kind of a raw deal ultimately. So that's kind of the unfortunate bit. Now, John, take it away.
Oh yes. This one got fun. So, I mean, yeah, I wrote on Twitter that I called San Francisco Glens salty and weak for scheduling this one at 12:30. There was some controversy in that. They said it was the Roots Soul's agreement in a joint host. There was also some other writing that it was a league decision. I mean, let's be real. I mean, everybody who follows this team, they know I'm well-sourced. They know my opinion comes from a good place.
Yes.
So I'm not going to write some bullshit. But, I mean, it was a bullshit decision.
John's subtweeting me viciously there.
But 12:30 on a work day. I mean, it's the earliest game of all playoff games, on the East Coast and Central Time included. I mean, it's a bad deal. It looks bad. I mean, anybody who listens to this is either a Roots lover, worker, or just a sicko. I mean, anyone.
Or all three.
Yeah, I know, right? So, I mean, there's no way the organization would agree to a 12:30 game. You know, they weren't ever asked about this. It was never their opinion. They can never put any input on it. And that's kind of obvious. I mean, I think anybody from a Oakland Roots perspective, soul perspective, sorry, I keep on saying that. It's hard to say. Oakland Roots as a whole, you know, it's an umbrella.
Right, it's still Oakland Roots Sports Club, even if this particular team is known as the Soul.
You know, that one's a, just to go on a tangent here, that one's a hard one for people in the stands too. You know, there's so many times where people say, Dolly, 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 Oakland Roots. And then there's a, oops. But yeah, anyways, you know, this team would never agree to a opportunity not to have their fans there. So, I mean, it's obvious they weren't consulted. I mean, anybody with a mind can read between the lines there. That's not even hard reporting. So, yeah, I mean, it really is a is what it is situation. So we'll see who is available. I mean, there is no point to doing a lineup guess here.
Is that going to stop you?
I mean, that's your call. It's your preview.
Yeah, if there's any consolation, I guess, it's that Glens didn't finish the season in the same dominant form that they began the season in. You know, the last three matches, a 4-4 draw against Calstorm, a 3-2 win against Marin Sirens, who were not good, and then this 3-1 loss against the Soul. So, I don't know. It is just kind of annoying. It's kind of annoying.
I mean, let's also say, I want to, you know, expand on what you said. I mean, you want to beat the best, you got to beat the best.
It's
I
tough,
mean,
the, right? That's a tough one to get out.
Yeah, the Glens are a fun team to watch. Like, you see them on the field. Nadia Gomes, she's just awesome. How she just glides across the field when she's in possession. It's like she's not even running with the ball, just free running. You know, they're a great team. I mean, it just sucks that their staff is so hell-bent on winning a developmental league. But also, I want to expand on is, you know, the league deserves some criticism here, especially how the standings are. You look at goal differential, you look at these teams with like 30, 40, 50 goal differential in some of these leagues. You know, we can bring up some of the scores. You know, Cal Storm with a 10-0 win. San Francisco Glens had a 10-0 win. I'm not sure. But the biggest one of all to end the season, Indy 11 with a 16-0 victory over another team. And you look at the standings, they finished two goals shy of top of their division in goal differential. One goal shy, two shy of finishing on top of it. So they were going for it in that last game. You know, because the rules are what they are, you have Indy 11 going out there wanting to beat the dog shit by a football score out of a developmental team. No one on the field benefits. No one on the field on the winning team benefits from a 16-0 victory. You should not be playing your starters. You shouldn't be asking your starters to do starter level things. You should be telling them to do something different. You should be getting in. You know you're going to walk over this team. You should be having your C team out there in the first place. You know, if this is a developmental team, you need to make the rules to disincentivize blowing teams out of the water. Because that's not a developmental league. That is a pro league. Yes, you want to be a pro league, but that's not in your company description right now. Save that for the Super League when there's no excuses.
Just a note on that. The team they beat 16-0 is something called St. Charles FC. I don't know where they're from, but that particular division is Racing Louisville, Lexington, something called King's Hammer FC, which is a pretty sweet name, actually. And then Indy 11. And St. Charles FC finished the year with one win, and it happens to have been over Indy 11, who came back and got a measure of revenge. There are some kinks to be worked out. I think your point there is well taken. There are some kinks to be worked out, but I mean, all in all, it's a pretty, it's, I mean, I think as far as their first season, I don't have too many complaints. I thought it was pretty well done by the standards the USL have set, at least graded on their own curve. You know, they did okay.
Yeah. You know, I'm critical. Yes, I'm critical, but I'm trying to help.
All right. Well, remember that, everyone, when we're critical of other things later in this episode.
I am looking at the St. Charles FC website, and they don't appear to say where they play. It's possible that they don't know.
There's a St. Charles, Missouri, and the St. Charles, complex. Illinois, right?
Maybe it's something like Roots in 2021. You're just playing in different places.
Yeah, Missouri.
There we go. So those poor women. Anyway, they have to live in Missouri. That's rough. All right, on to Roots business. So let's begin with the big off-field story that has come up since our last episode, which is the announcement of a, what do they call it, a community investment round or a community investment? Those are the words, right? I'm sure that the word community was part of this announcement. Details are scarce, let me put it like that. It's going to happen, I guess. Maybe it'll happen. They've announced that it'll happen. I didn't say when, what the terms would be, any of that generally important information one receives before investing in something. What we did find out is that, an investment in the Oakland Roots, sports club is going to be unlike an investment in the Green Bay Packers, in that you will get to share in the financial success of the Roots. I think it'll be like an investment in the Green Bay Packers in that I think there's not going to be much financial success to share in. So, I mean, it all comes out in the wash eventually, but there you have it.
That's funny. I thought you were going to say it was going to be like investing in the Packers and that people will be really obnoxious about it, including this guy.
Oh, I mean, I didn't want to subtweet you that directly. That's too many subtweets in the first 20 minutes of this episode. Yeah. Speaking of, I mean, just random question, you know, now that Twitter is imploding on itself, does the word subtweet, has it taken on life outside of Twitter such that people will understand that reference in 5 years?
Everyone's saying submastodon now.
Oh, that sounds terrible. All right. So, I think a lot of people were pretty excited about this. Yeah. Not the submastodoning, but the community investment.
Yeah, I mean it's something to be excited about. We'll see what levels of investment there are. There will be two different levels, like a minimum and a maximum of what you can invest. At least that's public. Other than that, we don't know. We don't know if there will be, what the percent stake is in the team, if there is, what other comparable models there are. When I've asked about the team, like, oh, is it something like Detroit? They want to say it's nothing like Detroit. You're actually getting something for it. For those who don't know, Detroit raised, like, I think it was 1.15 or 1.5 million through fan investment, and they offered something like 10% stake in the team. Well, it's not really clear exactly what those fans got. So what Roots are saying is, we're giving you something that's real, that's beneficial.
Right, but they're not saying what. I mean,
exactly.
Look, I am a bit of a cynic about things like this, and I haven't slept much recently, so it's going to come out here. And just like John, I'm just trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
The timing makes me skeptical for a couple of reasons. One, like, we, you know, I think people have asked this team about doing something like this for years now, because it is just such an obvious extension of what they're already doing. And I mean, I don't think we've ever heard anything official from the team saying, oh, no, this is why we're not doing it. But, like, various reasons get put forth about why it's not going to happen. They're usually kind of practical or whatever. But You know, those questions were always kind of brushed off. And I just sort of wonder why now, on the one hand, right? Like, it seems to me like you allow this kind of investment into the team when the big investors are okay with it. And nothing that they put out tells me why the big investors are currently okay with it. Why now? Why not at the end of last season or over the off season? Why not over, the coming off season? The other thing, and this is why I feel like the lack of detail in this announcement really stood out to me. Right, this team is so slick about social media and things like that. They are so maniacal almost about staying on top of the narrative, right? Like, how many times have we had a situation where you, John, like, you get wind of something, right? And as a responsible reporter, you're like, let me ask the team for comment. And somebody from the front office schedules a phone call with you for, 11 o'clock or whatever. And at 10:57, the team itself puts out something that totally blows whatever scoop you had out of the water. Right. This team loves to be on top of the narrative. And it's just so odd to me that they would release this statement when they did, when they don't, if you're not going to include all the details, if you're not going to be ready to share the details, it's just so bizarre to me. It's out of character with what they do. And it just, there are any number of good or benign reasons for all of this, but I just find it to be so strange that they did it when they did it and how they did it, that I'm just skeptical. And I don't think that you can say that the reasons are good, bad, or benign without knowing any of the rest of the details.
I have three suggestions. One, I think that they want to take advantage of people being pissed off at the Athletics. I think, what they tell us is that they don't have any gripes against the Athletics. They think more sports in Oakland is good, and I take them at their word at that, but I think they still see an opportunity to capitalize. I think they may have released some news at a time when the team is playing like horseshit. And it is something we can talk about rather than the fact that right now we're like a bottom two team in the league that is in the process of blowing its playoff berth. I mean, long way to go. I get that. But like, we have fallen from talking about a home playoff game to like two of our next three games are hard and we're looking at being out of a playoff spot before Hackshaw and Tamakis get back. So like, having everyone talk about being the East Bay Packers is like maybe preferable to the front office. On the other hand, our stories get 5,000 clicks. So like, okay. So then the third thing is, there was a third thing. Oh, I wonder if, as long as we're airing dirty laundry here, I wonder if there is a not full agreement in the front office about what this means. And the more political people in the front office got permission to release this statement and then can use that as leverage to make sure that this thing happens when the more financial people in the front office start saying, maybe we don't want this to be the case.
And honestly, I could buy any of those three explanations. They're so, again, I'm kind of dumbfounded that they would put out a statement with so little content to it. And I don't think without additional details, you can't tell which of those three explanations or if there's a fourth or fifth explanation, which one is the reason. I would love to believe it. It's they're taking advantage of the Athletics. I mean, especially since the Athletics did such a good job of taking advantage of the Raiders leaving for Las Vegas a few years ago. I mean, they capitalized on that a little bit. Obviously, John Fisher managed to squander it as fast as he possibly could, but they did capitalize on it for a brief period of time. And I mean, if that's what they're doing, that's great. And that would, I would find that to be a benign, a slightly good reason for the statement being looking like it does. But I just feel like there's any number of reasons why it is like it is currently, why they would release the statement like they did, that are maybe less good. I think that's where I am right now with this. It's potentially very exciting. I will give them that.
It's funny. What I found so strange about it was framing it as like, this is a real financial investment where you'll share in the Roots financial success. And it's like, that's not why anyone is doing this. Shares of clubs in Europe. Like, I want, you know, like, I'm interested in having a voice on the board and helping the club raise money and buy players. But like, I don't think I'm going to get fucking dividends.
Right. If you're the kind of person who's investing in things because you want to share in the financial success of that thing, you're not looking at a minor league soccer team. You're looking at a mutual fund at the very least.
Well, and you're not looking at a 4-digit investment. You're looking at a 6-digit investment.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, how much to get Josie Altidor out of his house and onto the goddamn field? Because
these are the details we needed. We're like, maybe this is actually the Josie Altidor GoFundMe. This would be a completely different conversation.
Maybe they're trying to get Josie Altidor to buy into the community fund. And then he'll be like, if I want this investment to pay off, I need to go score 30 goals a season.
Fingers crossed. As you say, one of the other potential reasons here is that it is a distraction from what is going on in the field. Which hasn't been good. There's only so many ways to say it. John, you put in the, I think it was in the live blog where you said, you called the, God, who they even play last? I've already wiped it from my memory.
RGV.
You said that game was the Roots' worst performance of the season. I'm not positive I agree. I think it might have been Hartford, but it's one of the two. It wasn't altogether fun to watch. Let me play devil's advocate here slightly, because I think one of the things that has characterized the team in the last three matches is the playing of square pegs and round holes, or however that saying goes, right? I mean, Nane in the middle of the back three, Wolfgang and as the left wing back. I mean, we've heard he's played there in practice, but it did not look natural for him. Maybe the thinking was, look, we got a good thing going with this team. We just have to grit it out, gut it out for three, maybe four matches while arguably our two best players are, you know, on international duty. Four games is not going to ruin the season. I mean, you know, how many... The first few years with this team, right? 12 game stretches where you're like, Jesus Christ, this is hard to watch. And they still make the playoffs and they still win a game in the playoffs. This team was already in a better spot. Why don't we just continue doing the same thing, even if it's not the optimal thing, and just hope we get through it on the other side without too much damage being done? I hope that was the thinking, because man, did it look bad. I mean, I know we scored against Phoenix, but I wouldn't say that the Roots really looked like scoring at any point in the last 270 minutes of football. And one of the things that I kept thinking about, especially during the RGV match, was that we had praised very early in the season what we thought of as kind of the tactical flexibility of Noah Delgado, especially as compared to Juan Guerra. That one of the things that we said on this podcast was it looks like Noah knows how to win in more ways than one. And we did not get that sense from Guerra. And I would have expected something to change, right? Just literally anything to change, because we didn't have the personnel to run a 3-4-3 in the way we've been running it. And it didn't. Nothing changed. It looked bad. The Roots now have 3 points out of the last 12 available. You know, it's as Peter said, they're now clinging on to a playoff berth for dear life after looking like maybe we're talking about the third seed in the West. It's not pretty. There's a light at the end of the tunnel, because Hackshaw and Tomakis will be back. Maybe not this weekend, but maybe the midweek game next week. So it's not like this is going to last forever, but man, it was hard to watch. And I don't have a question, to ask any of you to kickstart the rest of this discussion, because it was just bad.
Yeah, it was bad. It was stressful. I mean, those lost 3 points. I mean, the 3 points would have gone a long way. They would have been in fifth right now with those 3 points, and we're still talking about a home playoff game. I mean, now you go into, you put yourself in a hole going into Tampa Bay, which might be, you know, one of the best teams in the league. They're looking great. Charlie Dennis is having a hell of a year. That hurts me in a lot of ways. So, I mean, the question is, how does the attack look since Rito's departure? It's hard to say because they went 5 matches unbeaten after, you know, he was dealt. I mean, bringing up the numbers.
Yeah, but apparently so much of that success in attack, such as it was, I mean, this is still not a particularly threatening offense, but it was at least efficient. Mm-hmm. Apparently a lot of that is to Marcus and Hackshaw, which is a wild thing to say, that the attack is dependent on the presence of 2 defenders.
But I mean, I think that, like, you look at, you know, what stuck out to me in this game, and partially it was where we were sitting, is how much Danny Barbier and Wolfgang Prentice were yelling at each other. And I think that that had a lot to do with Barbier having a different understanding of when Prentice was going to play defense versus when he was going to go on attack. And a lot of play broke down on that side with those 2 guys yelling at each other. And that says to me, that helps bolster what we've been talking about for a couple weeks, which is that, as weird as it is, it looks like our offense doesn't run without our 2 best defenders. And that's, you know, Tamakis isn't there, but because Tamakis isn't on the field, Diaz isn't there. And Diaz is the guy who's supposed to be working back with Barbier. And so that relationship is gone, you know, at least until they, you know, until Diaz can get back on that side of the field, that relationship that has been working most of the season is gone. I also think, you know, I mean, I think that Nane, I think it's pretty clear. I mean, you've talked about this before, Aaron, that Nane is in that role because he can handle Hackshaw's distribution. And I think the other thing is he's big. And so he is an adequate defender on a lot of things like set pieces, a lot of, you know, when all 3 of your center backs have to be in the box, he can do that job. One thing that I noticed in this past game also is that, like, Nane was not moving significantly to receive the ball when they were trying to cycle the ball around to restart possession. And I don't know that Hackshaw does a lot of that movement, but I think that that's, I think that Nane is something of a downgrade on Hackshaw in that regard, in playing that center back role in the way that Hackshaw does. So I think that those are, I mean, I think you're right, it is counterintuitive, but I am increasingly certain that it will improve the team offensively when those guys get back.
There's almost nowhere to go. That Formella goal against Phoenix kind of came out of nothing. And apart from that, that's the only goal in the last 270 minutes. And I can't think of a time when I was like, this team looks very threatening right now in any of those 3 games. The flip side of that, of course, is that they were 30 minutes from getting 3 draws. And that's not spectacular, but you think to yourself, hey, you know, we're missing 2 very important players. Plus, we just kind of traded our best player for somebody who's like a poor man's Darlington Nagby, and we're still holding serve right now. And, you know, and then those last 30 minutes happen, and you're like, yeah, this was kind of coming the whole time. You know, we were just sort of waiting for something to go wrong. I mean, Peter, you sort of, I think, I forget exactly whether this is a conversation just you and I had, and I'm blowing up your spot, or whether this is something I saw you say out in a public forum, but you kind of put those 2 goals on Nane's lack of familiarity with being a defender. And I mean, I could definitely see the point. Part of me, though, wonders if, I mean, the first one felt a lot more like just a bad bounce. Now, he wasn't in a great position. I don't know why he was where he was. But if that ball doesn't bounce off of the RGV player in the direction that it did, you know, that might not be a goal. And the second one, he should have had better awareness about being the last man back, but it also looked like he had played too many minutes. Like, I think he has the recovery speed there in minute 10 that he didn't have in what, minute 80 or whatever it was. So I don't know. They were so close to getting out of there with three draws, but at the same time, it was just incredibly uninspiring football. And two wins out of the last three, or two draws out of the last three with the one loss is, I think it's deserved, really, given the way the match has played out on the field.
I think that's largely right. I may have been harsher on Nane previously than I'm feeling about him right now. You know, I'll walk back some of my criticism of him and instead turn up the criticism on everyone by saying, I feel like that game was close for whatever, 66 minutes. And then RGV realized they didn't have to worry about a goddamn thing the Roots were going to do with the ball. There was just absolutely, I mean, it's like the Hitchhiker's Guide. They realized we were mostly harmless, and then it was easy, you know. Then they didn't have to worry. They could, when they had a break, everyone commits, they force a mistake, goal, game over, 3 points done. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's really grim. RGV are not that good. They did just get a result against Sacramento. That's not nothing. Roots haven't managed to do that this season. But
yeah, RGV are second from the bottom in the West.
Yeah.
And it's not the kind of team you want to be. You want to be dropping 3 points to at home, regardless of what your roster looks like. Sorry, John, I stepped on your toes there. Go ahead.
No, I mean, it's just the offense has not been, clicking. I mean, yeah, I brought it up now. Since Rito's departure, Roots have 4 goals in the last 6 games. Rito's last 3 matches were 4-1 win, 3-0 win, and 2-0 win. So, I mean, and you still kind of see some of those aspects of when Rito was a part of the system, you know, a lot of dribbles down the wing, but we don't have the speed to break those one-on-ones or 2v1s. You know, I think of this match, and I remember a lot of times where players were isolated down the wing, and it was just the easy 2v1, get a foot on the ball, start a counterattack. So, I mean, the offense has got to find a way to get going again. Peters, you've commented on it, how it's, you know, the thing is just looked bleak lately. You know, no one really seemed willing to pull the trigger. You know, Noah commented that, you know, players are smart. They're not going to just boot the ball into anybody. But, you know, at some time you hope someone will just, you know, say, all right, I need to make a play right now. Let's just line it up from 30, you know, Caitlin Brinkman, that thing, or Hayashi.
Like you said, John, it isn't about to get better. In fact, it's arguably going to get worse. The next team through the door, Tampa Bay Rowdies, currently tied for first in the East. They are on 31 points along with Pittsburgh and Charleston. I think they have a much better goal differential than Charleston and more goals than Pittsburgh. So they would be the one seed if the season were to end right now. And then we get the next midweek, we get the rescheduled home game with Memphis, who you will recall when this match was scheduled to take place originally, Memphis was shambles, and Memphis is now 3 points off the lead in the East with 2 games in hand on Tampa and Pittsburgh and 3 in hand on Charleston. So arguably the best 2 teams in the East are the next 2 on the schedule. And then we get a spicy rivalry matchup against Monterey Bay, who is in 5th and appears to be scoring, converting chances at an unsustainable rate, but they haven't stopped yet. So we can only hope. This could get worse before it gets better. You know, all of this goes away if, as soon as Tomagas and Hackshaw return, the team looks like normal. If the team is still a little adrift at that point, I think you have to say, what changes are we going to make? I think at that point, you got to make those changes. But yeah, Tampa Bay, Charlie Dennis having himself a season, huh, John?
Yeah, hell of a season. I mean, you could even expand to the fourth game there. Next four games are all against teams in playoff contention with El Paso, who at one point, I mean, they're looking like one of the best teams in the league right now. So, I mean, if there's one, you know, silver lining, Memphis just lost 6-0 to Phoenix. So, I mean, I would rather them not put that game, you know, already by them if they're gonna melt down. I just want one of those teams to melt down against Roots, you know, have another San Diego moment in the playoffs last year. But we'll see. But yeah, Tampa Bay, really tough. I mean, you know what you're getting out of them. They're gonna be a team that likes to break you down. They're gonna take a lot of shots. They're solid in everything they do. I mean, possession, defense. They're a tough team. So we walk out of there with a draw. I'm happy. We walk out of there with a positive result. I mean, that'd be amazing. I mean, especially after these last two games. I mean, we didn't even touch on the last Phoenix match, how that sloppiness really carried into the RGV game. And they were making like the sloppy plays in tenfold in the Phoenix match compared to the RGV, and RGV just finished the job. So you can't do that. That's what I'm looking for in this match. These next group of matches is crisp play. No mistakes. Don't play like me on FIFA.
Tampa has 18 goals from three guys, none of whom played for the team the season before. Like, Tampa just went out and signed Cal Jennings, Charlie Dennis, and JJ Williams and has 18 goals from them, which is just, I mean, that's like the most USL haves versus have nots shit.
I want these acquisitions.
Well, on that note, I actually, I did some reporting this week, some, you know, we're working applause, the beats everyone. And, I got Jordan Farrell to agree to an interview of one question. And I asked if the Roots were going to sign anyone. And he said, ha ha, I'm always looking at players. So you can take that one to the bank.
That's the kind of insider stuff you're bound to get here.
When I say that he agreed to an interview, what I mean is I said hi to him. He recognized me, but clearly didn't remember from where. I then asked him who we were signing, and he regretted acknowledging me.
That's how the usual interviews go, you know?
Brutal. Brutal. So, yeah, Tampa is, they're fucking good. There's not many, not many ways to say this. They began the season in their first seven matches, one win, two draws, four losses. So that's 5 points in the first seven matches. And since then, they have 8 wins and 2 draws. So they are on fire, I guess. I mean, just the worst time to get them. And you mentioned the Phoenix loss, but prior to that, Memphis had won 7 of their previous 8, and that 8th was a draw. So we're talking two teams that are on fire, that are at the top of their game, and this is just a brutal time to try to figure things out, honestly. So fingers crossed, there's nothing to figure out. It's just a matter of getting the guys back. You know, I think we'll know a lot about how the rest of the season is going to go based on that. Is there all of a sudden a lot of work to do, or are we just kind of freaking out about nothing? Because it looked bad when two important guys were missing. I mean, who is not going to look bad? So, John, how did the Oakland Roots beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies?
Oh man, they are going to win 2-1. They're gonna have a little breakthrough on offense, get it together. Goals by Formella and Lindo.
And how do the Oakland Roots beat Memphis 901 FC?
They are going to win 2-1 as well.
You just couldn't think of a different score. I put you on the spot and you couldn't think
of
a different score.
I wanted to go 3, but that just didn't feel right. You know, I was like, nah, don't, you know, you can say,
don't be silly.
You can say stupid shit, but don't go that stupid.
So 2-1, both matches. All right. Peter, what say you?
The Roots lose to Tampa 2-0. It never looks close. But they beat Memphis and make us feel a lot better about it. But they beat Memphis 1-0. But then they get a string of games where I'll predict wins, but not against Tampa.
The vibes are currently very bad.
Yeah, I'm getting bad vibes right now, and I'm kind of giving them back.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the answer to the question, how do the Oakland Roots beat the Tampa Bay Rowdies, is the scoreboard guy screws up somehow. Like, I think that's the answer. It just, on the road, you know, at this point, the team looked tired. And I don't say that just because Wolfgang Prentice sweats more than any normal human being should sweat. I mean, that was terrifying, actually. I feel like he needs a personal water break in the middle of a half. Yeah, I'm not seeing it against Tampa Bay. I am willing to predict that the cure for what ails the Roots is simply the return of Tomakis and Hackshaw, which should happen, we think. We hope, you know, just based on timing against Memphis, a home game, that's great. Midweek, Memphis, I think, has to travel out to Oakland after playing, you know, at the weekend, so that's good. These are the straws available to be grasped at, I think. I'll say 2-1. John, I think you've inspired me. 2-1 sounds good. Rolls off the tongue. I don't know who gets the goals, but someone gets the goals. And I'm sure that Paul will make 2 or 3 outrageous saves that make us go, Jesus Christ, thank God for Paul Blanchett. Well, there we have it. Hopefully the vibes improve over the weekend. But if not, I mean, there's no better way to, you know, engage with bad vibes than with your friends at a pub in front of a TV that's showing the Roots and a beer in front of you. So perhaps that happens this weekend. Perhaps we'll see you somewhere in the East Bay. If you can, I think it would be pretty cool to see the Oakland Soul at Skyline College, right, John? They're playing at Skyline in San Bruno against Glens.
At 12:30.
So if you can make the drive on Friday afternoon to San Bruno, that'd be pretty cool too. And then maybe hopefully we'll see you next week in the stands in Hayward watching the Roots play Memphis. So we'll see you at some point. And until then, up the Roots.